Thank you so much. I forgot to remind you to stay after the reading and meet Vivian Gornick and Mary Elsie Robertson. Mary Elsie Robertson's novels are After Freud, which was the winner of the 1980 AWP Novel Award, The Clearing, Family Life, Speak, Angel, and most recently, What I Have to Tell You. She also has two collections of short fiction, Jordan Stormy Banks and Other Stories, and Vision. One of her two novels for children, Jemima Lee, was the winner of a favorite title for awards, the Babbling Bookworm Award. Her second novel for children is Tarantula and Red Chigger. I'm very happy to welcome Mary Elsie Roberts.
I'm going to read a chapter from What I Have to Tell You. I'm not reading the first chapter, which means I have to explain just a little bit. The narrator of the novel is a woman called Jessie Farquharson, and she comes of an old and rich Virginia family. And when this chapter takes place, she has just married a person that she's known all her life, practically. A boy who comes from the country. He's a backwoods boy called Duane. She is just bringing Duane home in this chapter. I should probably tell you, too, that Jordan is Jesse's twin brother. Mama was waiting for me in front of the drugstore when the bus pulled into Sweet Gum on that Thursday afternoon in May. She slid out of the truck and stood looking up at the windows on the bus, trying to see me behind the tinted glass. When I climbed down the steps, her smile stretched. "Jess," she called out, waving. Anyone could tell she was being welcoming. But I'd already seen it. Mama braced for disappointment. If I'd thought getting married might bring about some changes in me, one look into Mama's face told me the same old story. There I stood, the same drab Jessie, my skirt drooping where the hem had come out, looking down at Mama with eyes magnified behind my glasses, my hair stringing. More than once, Mama had said to me, too exasperated to keep her mouth shut, "I wonder if you do it on purpose, Jessie, so beaten down looking, just to make me feel bad." I knew she always had some hope when she saw me again after an absence that I might have somehow transformed myself while I was away, and she would see this stranger coming toward her, a trim and assured stranger with hair making sweet tendrils around her face. I knew about Mama's hopes because I'd seen the flicker of disappointment pass over her face so many times. When she hugged me, she had to reach up to pat me between the shoulder blades, though Mama was far from being a short woman. I stood loaded down with books, my winter coat, a bag holding the things, lettuce, half-full bottles of ketchup and mayonnaise, a nearly complete loaf of bread I hadn't had the heart to throw out when I emptied my apartment. "Mama," I said, nudging her with my shoulder, which was the best I could do with my hands full. She had let her hair grow since I'd seen her at spring break, and it had reached her shoulders. The fullness softened her face and made her look even younger than I remembered, and I was struck all over again by her beauty. That always took me by surprise, just as my plainness did her. A little breeze pushed her hair against my neck, and as I leaned over, I thought bitterly, "Oh, fairness plays no part in life. It doesn't even enter in." "Why, hello, Duane," Mama said across my shoulder. "Where did you come from? Do you need a ride?" Duane stood there swallowing, and I saw he hadn't realized how it would be, appearing in front of Mama like that. His eyes showed too much white, like a horse's that's about to bolt. "Duane's with me," I said quickly, but naturally the significance of this remark didn't mean a thing to Mama, who was hurrying along to oversee the unloading of the suitcases, so nothing of mine would be scuffed along the curb. I caught Duane's eye in a meaningful way, urging him to say something, but I could tell by the grim set of his mouth he had gone tongue-tied, and I knew I might as well expect a cat to take charge as hope for anything out of Duane. It was up to me to tell Mama. I saw that clearly as I put my books and baggies in the back of the truck, but I couldn't seem to decide how to start the sentence that would break the news. I saw too late. I had done it all wrong from the beginning. I should have gotten off the bus with my arm around Dwayne's shoulder and should have said before I stepped down from the last step, "Mama, I'm married to Dwayne. I've got our marriage certificate right here in my book bag, and there's not a thing you can do about it. So what do you think of that?" Now I had waited until all three of us were crowded into the cab of the truck, with me next to Mama and Dwayne hanging one elbow out the window. It wasn't turning out the way I thought it would at all, but there was nothing for it. I shut my eyes and said very fast, "Dwayne and I were married on Tuesday, Mama, at a Justice of the Peace in Washington, D.C. And then I opened my eyes quickly to see Mama's hand still on the steering wheel and one of mine hanging onto the dash. A doomed feeling came over me. I looked over at Mama's face, expecting to cheer myself up by seeing her shock and horror, waiting for her to say, "Oh, no, Jesse, you can't do this. Think of letting you. Dwayne Hawkins, married? Never." But instead, she stared straight ahead without saying a word. I grew lightheaded and thought maybe I'd only imagined telling Mama that Dwayne and I were married, and it was all still left to do. "Dwayne," Mama said, "I'm going to let you out at your daddy's Sunoco station. I'm afraid I can't take the time to drive you home." She might just as well have said, "Lunge, lazy boy, for me, would you? He needs the exercise," for all she gave away. And there I had been, all prepared for her to place her hand over her heart and say, "Why, Jesse? Why are you doing this to me?" A question I had waited, it seemed to me, all my life to answer. As for Dwayne, I could see I would get no help out of him. I remembered now a fact I had conveniently set aside when I married him, that he had always been in awe of Mama. On those afternoons he had come to our house to play basketball with Jordan, he had stood in the kitchen door, afraid to set a foot inside until Mama called out, "Why, come on in, don't stand there with the screen open, letting the flies in." I saw it was hopeless to expect Dwayne to say, "Jesse's with me now, and you can reach us at Best Western if you want to see us." All he did was whisper in the direction of my ear, "Jesse?" Mama pulled up to the curb in front of the Sunoco station and waited for Dwayne to get out, keeping her foot harder on the gas than she needed, so the gear shuddered back and forth between us like something having a fit. "I'll telephone you later, Dwayne," I said coldly. I could see the anguish look he was giving me, but Dwayne and his hurt feelings were not uppermost in my mind just then. Finally, Dwayne opened the door of the cab and got one leg out, but then he stuck there, half in and half out. I knew he was wondering what he should do, turn back and kiss me, establishing his claim, pull me along with him into the street. But it was indecision that was his undoing, the little hesitation that threw everything off until it was too late for any kind of brave gesture. The best he could do was let his hand on my leg before he climbed the rest of the way out the door and took his duffel bag from the back of the truck. "Don't stand there in the street with your mouth open, Dwayne," I told him out the window. "I'll talk to you later." I could tell by the dazed look in his eyes it had been a very different story he had been telling himself as the bus drew near Sweet Gum. He could probably see himself being hugged, welcomed into the family. He could probably just hear Mama saying, "Why, Dwayne, how nice you've married Jesse, a fine boy like you. Did you say you'd like a set of keys to Clearwater? Why, here you are, son." And instead, there he was, abandoned to the exhaust fumes as we sped away. I almost felt sorry for him. "Mama," I said as we left Dwayne behind, still standing in the middle of the road, "did you hear me tell you what I told you just now?" "There's nothing the matter with my hearing I know of," Mama said. And after that, her mouth shut tight, her eyes fast on the road. I was so full of bitter disappointment I could have kicked a hole through the cab door. Of all the things I'd imagined Mama doing or saying when she heard my news, this was not one of them. It wasn't until she pulled the truck up to the side door of the house and brought it to a halt that she turned in her seat to fix me with those steely blue eyes of hers. "I want you to know, Jesse," she said, "that just because you married Dwayne Hawkins in some kind of huff, you don't have to stay married to him." "Is that what you think it is, a huff? Just what kind of huff do you think it could be that would make me do something like that?" "You tell me," Mama said, holding my eyes with hers. "You tell me." Too many words pressed on me at once. You always favored Jordan. You never loved me as much as you do him. You're in cahoots over every single thing, the two of you with your heads together. So I couldn't choose. No reason, I said. No reason, no reason. So you're in love with Duane, Mama said. Is that what I'm to believe? I studied the walnut trees outside the side window of the truck. Well, Mama said, softly hitting the steering wheel with the palm of her, leaning forward, trying to get a look full into my face, but I made sure she didn't. Just tell me what it is you hold against me so, she said, and I steel my heart against the sadness in her voice. Why, Mama, I said, whatever makes you think I hold anything against you? Can't I even get married without you taking the blame for it? What gets your goat is I took you by surprise. Can't you just admit it? I took you by surprise. Mama sighed, a gentle melancholy sigh that could have been aimed at an audience of hundreds. Sweetheart, she said, reaching out her hand to me. Oh, sweetheart. But I was already out the truck, grabbing two suitcases from the back before I opened the door and walked fast through the kitchen where Sophie watched me pass through, hands on hips. Hey, Sophie, I said as I went past. The suitcases bumped on the stairs all the way to the top, but I got them into my room and locked the door behind me. The door locking was only a gesture, however. I knew Mama would never come storming up the stairs behind me, pounding on the door. It was something she would never do. I lay down on the bed with my hands under my head and waited. I knew what I was listening for, and late in the afternoon I heard it, the sound of Jordan's little BMW as he turned off the highway and into the long driveway that led to Clearwater, where it stood on its hill. I knew the sound of Jordan's car just as well as I knew his footsteps, would recognize either if I were dead and buried. I unlocked my door and tiptoed to the stair landing in time to hear Mama say, Jordan, you broke the speed limit all the way here. But to my disappointment, I couldn't hear anything more than the hush, hush, hush of their voices as they moved into the sitting room, walking with their arms, I was sure, around each other's waist, straight to the big wing chairs beside the fireplace, where they would sit with their heads nearly touching, leaning forward as people do who have secrets to share. Mama and Jordan, Jordan and Mama, even the way their eyebrows grew was exactly the same, a cord passing between them like fire traveling down a stick. I could hear the rise and fall of their voices, two people singing the same notes. If it had been different, I might have run down the stairs and flung myself into the middle of the rug with my hands clasped in front of my heart while I cried, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean to marry Duane. All I wanted was to make you suffer. But the sight of the two of them leaning together so conspiratorially would bring me up short, would stop the outcry in my throat. As the one left outside the magic circle, the one pounding on the door begging to be let in, I would rather die than see the pity in their eyes. And I knew in that moment pride would hold me to Duane as tightly as a tick holding to the neck of a dog. Nothing would shake me loose. I saw it all with cold clarity, how I would squander my education, as Mama would put it, as though all those hours of reading Greek and Latin were so much scratch thrown out to the chickens. A bitter smile curled my lips when I thought of this, and I went silently back to my room and closed the door, making a sound, leaving Mama and Jordan to talk behind my back. Of course, the Greek and Latin had been for my pleasure, though they didn't know this. I knew how, down below, Mama was pouring out two scotches, gently slipping the ice into the glasses without bothering to look down, her eyes never wavering from Jordan's face. I'd barely shut the door of my room behind me when I heard Jordan climbing up the stairs, two at a time. Jesse, he said, rattling the doorknob, that old white porcelain knob with the fine little cracks in it. Let me in, Jess. He sounded demanding, but I caught the note of anxiety in his voice. I knew as well as if I'd heard the conversation, Mama saying, Oh, you go try talking sense to her, Jordan. You've always been so close, you two. You know she won't listen to anything I tell her. But Jordan knew very well I hadn't said one word to him for a month, not since the party at the Kappa Sig house when Jordan had said that horrible thing. He knew I held something against him, knew things had changed, but still, there he was, pretending nothing had happened. We don't have anything to talk about, Jordan, I told him coldly through the door, my heart hammering wildly, but my voice calm. I knew just the way Jordan was standing, leaning toward the door, listening, running his fingers through his hair the wrong way so it stood up in ragged peaks, When he was little and got upset, he would bite on the fleshy part of his thumb until tears came into his eyes, never being able to hide what he was feeling as well as I could. "Jesse," he said, "I don't have anything against Duane. I always liked him fine. I think maybe I understand you're doing what you've done." "Really? You understand my marrying Duane? Well, that's amazing, Jordan." "What's amazing about it?" Jordan said, sounding peeved. There he was, doing his best, and for all he could tell, I was making fun of his efforts. "Did you know Duane moves his lips when he reads? Did you know that? Even when he reads a comic book, he moves his lips, and anything besides a comic book is beyond him." "Damn it, Jesse, what's the matter with you anyway? Why are you acting so strange? If you're mad about something, what is it? Let me in there so we can talk some sense." "You think this isn't sense? You've just told me it's fine with you if I marry somebody who moves his lips when he reads. That tells me plenty." It came over me again powerfully, all I'd felt of humiliation and misery, standing behind the column in the Kappa Sig house, listening to what Jordan had never meant me to hear. The doorknob on its long, loose stem rattled furiously. "What do you want me to say?" Jordan said angrily. "Tell you marrying Duane Hawkins was the stupidest thing you've ever done in a long line of stupid things? All right, it's stupid. Is that enough, or do you want to hear me say it again? Stupid, stupid." "Oh, don't stop there," I said in a cold, calm voice. "Go on, tell all the rest." "What rest?" Jordan said warily, instantly on the alert. "What are you talking about?" "Betrayal," I wanted to cry out. "I heard you betray me while behind that column, you mealy-mouthed bastard. I heard it all, even that laugh of yours I'd know anywhere. But my heart shriveled inside me and I couldn't speak. All those years when I thought Jordan and I had a special understanding had been nothing but a lie. I didn't know the first thing about Jordan." The doorknob on its long stem turned back and forth, and then it stopped. On the other side of the door, Jordan was silent so long I thought maybe he'd slipped off his shoes and slid away in his stocking feet. But then he spoke, his lips right against the door crack. "JJ?" he said so softly I might almost have imagined it. "JJ?" It was Jordan's old name for me, the one from the time he'd seemed like a part of my own body, another arm or leg. That name from the beginning, when we'd slept with our heads on the same pillow and had waked every morning looking into the other's face. The one name that could strike me to the heart. How dare he say that name to me after what he had done? "If you don't leave me alone, Jordan, I'll kill you," I said. "I'll take one of Daddy's pistols and shoot you through the heart." "Very well," he said. "Stew in your own juice, then." I could hear his footsteps walking away, leaving me alone. It took all my willpower to stop myself from running after him, to cry out, "I didn't mean any of it, Jordan." But instead, I waited where I was until I could hear him at the bottom of the stairs and knew he wasn't going to turn back. Then I grabbed the pillow off my bed, the one Grandmother Carter had made for Jordan and me when we were born, yanked open the top drawer of my dresser, took out my fingernail scissors, and started clipping away at those fine little embroidery stitches, the stitches joining our names together, Jordan and Jesse, in a heart of love intertwined with rosebuds that was meant to link the two of us forever. By nightfall, the pillowcase was nothing but a rag pierced with hundreds of tiny needle holes, and all around me on the floor were the red and blue and green threads. A small, gaudy bird might have had its feathers plucked at my feet. The next morning, I came to a halt in the doorway of the kitchen where Mama and Jordan were facing each other across the table drinking coffee. When they saw me, they set their cups back down in the saucers and pushed them aside out of the line of fire. Clearly, they expected a fight. But all I said was, "I have to have the car today." "The keys are in the glove compartment," Mama said, "but can't you eat breakfast first? You haven't even seen Jordan, and now he has to go back to Richmond." I'd refused to come downstairs the night before for supper, so Mama had left it on a tray outside my door. I was certain they were relieved, getting to have a quiet evening together without me giving them both black looks from my side of the table. "I've got important things to do today," I said. "I can't waste time just sitting around." I didn't look back, but I knew Mama and Jordan would be at the table, not moving a muscle until they heard the engine of the car start, and then they would jump up, help themselves to biscuits hot from the oven, refill their coffee cups, and settle down to talk in peace about me until Jordan had to leave. Drove straight out to Duane's house, 6 miles into the country, over a road oily with shale, where the bushes and scrub oak threatened the little space cars and trucks could call their own. I'd practiced my driving on those back roads when I was 16, and I knew them well. This one was lined with overgrown fields and houses with roofs curving down like the backbones of old cows. The house where Duane's family lived was as run down as any. Those boards had never seen paint. In the yard, two gutted trucks without wheels had come to permanent rest at the side of the porch, which sheltered a washing machine, a tractor wheel, and two wash kettles filled with dirt, where dead petunias and marigolds bowed their heads. Three bony hounds came out from under the house to bark while I sat in the middle of the road blowing the car horn. Heads appeared in the windows and disappeared again. Waves of consternation reached me where I sat beside the mailbox, but I kept my face straight ahead until somebody ran over the hard-packed ground, and there was Duane opening the car. "You know what?" he said, slamming it behind him. "When I came in yesterday saying I was married to you, they thought I was making it up. You ought to have heard the carry-on when you drove up." "There's a carry-on at my house, too," I said. Duane opened the car window and the wind rushed through, flattening down his hair. "Hey, Duane," I said, patting his knee to cheer him up. We were in cahoots now, and I was glad to see him. "I thought you were going to call me last night," he said, sounding hurt. "You said you would." "No chance," I told him, though to tell the truth, Duane had hardly entered my thoughts from the time he had gotten out of the truck at his father's Sunoco station. Other things had taken my attention. Jordan came over from Richmond, and he and Mama had their heads together about us. That's what they're doing this minute, sitting at the kitchen table, talking us up one side and down the other. Duane looked pleased. "Is that where we're heading for, then? Your house?" "Are you crazy?" I said. "We've got to find us a place to live. That's what we have to do today." "I thought we'd stay at your house," Duane said, looking disappointed. "I don't know where you got that idea," I told him. "You sure didn't get it from me." "Your house is so big," he said, "and just your mama rattling around in it." There was a wistful note in his voice I thought I'd better curb right away. "You wouldn't last 5 minutes in that house, Duane," I told him cruelly. "Why not?" he wanted to know. "Your mom always seemed to like me fine." "Well, why shouldn't she?" I said, "when all you did was come over to our house and throw basketballs around in the afternoons, a far cry from marrying into the family." I didn't tell him that half the time Mama couldn't remember his given name and referred to him as that red-headed Hawkins boy. "But listen," Duane said, "all I get working for Daddy is $120 a week. That's not much to find a place on, is it?" "We're just going to be poor then," I told him. "Good," was what I added to myself but didn't say. I could see the way I'd trail through town wearing some old shapeless dress with cheeks sunken, a sack over my back for putting the aluminum cans in I'd find in trash barrels out at the fairgrounds where people sometimes took picnics if they didn't have anything better to do. "You know who that is?" people would say, pointing me out as I made my slow way, old basketball sneakers of Duane's flapping on my feet like flippers. "Would you believe that Sarah Eve Farquharson's girl, the one who owns Clearwater?" "You sure your mama wouldn't give you any money if you ask her?" Duane said. As a matter of fact, I had some money left over from the college fund I'd lived on frugally all those years, but I wasn't about to let Duane know I had a penny. "Listen, Duane," I said, "you better get this through your head right now. Mama was furious when she found out I'd married you, so you'd better forget about any help coming out of that quarter. A cheap place to live is what we're looking for, a very cheap place." By nightfall, we'd found one on the top floor of a suitably decrepit house on the side of a hill leading down to Black. The lower half was lived in by Esau Flanagan, whose shoes were held together with baling wire and who had snuff juice dribbling down his chin. The house smelled of vinegar and mice, and when I turned on the hot water tap, a thin trickle, the color of horse piss, came out. I told old man Flanagan we'd take the place. "Comes furnished," he said aggressively. "Not many places this price comes furnished. Bed, sofa, table, everything a body needs." "Fine," I told him, "we'll take it. Even got you some skillets and things of that nature. My wife, she was the one to think of that." "Looks great," I told him. "Rent due first day of the month," he said warningly. "Not on the second or the third, but the first, right on the nail." We could give you a month's rent right now, I said, giving Duane a sharp look, so he came to, like somebody who had just been taking a nap, and took his checkbook out of his back pocket. Even when he wrote out the check and handed it over, the old man's expression didn't change. I don't want electric or no phone, and what you do with your trash is your lookout, he said. When the old man finally went back down the stairs, bringing both feet together on each step the way two-year-olds do, Duane shut the door behind him. You really think this place is okay? He said doubtfully. Sure, I said. Why not? Looks to me like stuff's been coming off the ceiling, Duane said. You don't think it's kind of run down? Oh, a little paint will do wonders, I told him airily. Duane cheered up enough to go and look out the window. Hey, look, Jesse, he said. You can see all the way down to that big new development, the one across Black Creek, Suncrest Hills. I heard the longing in his voice and saw in a flash what he wanted so much. The sprawling ranch house with carpet thick enough to sink to his ankles in, a giant screen television in the bedroom, a Winnebago the size of a small house in the driveway. If he had all of that, he'd never get over the wonder of it and would be forever showing kinfolks of his through the place like it was the sacred holy. This here's the micro, he'd say with awe in his voice. And see that matching deep freeze and refrigerator? Busy making ice anytime you want it. This is just a start, isn't it? Duane said, looking hopeful. He put his arm around me and intertwined his fingers with mine the way he liked to do. Everybody has to start somewhere. I told him yes, everybody did. So we'll just have to work our way up to something better, won't we, Jesse? He said, sounding happy. I didn't tell him no.